This week on Art of the Air features Governor State University's Education Outreach Coordinator Sherry Deneau discussing Nathan's sculptural garden and her own art. Next, we have Susan Kirk, who uses her background in ecology to inform her photography. Our spotlight is on Dorothy Graydon and her new exhibit, opening July 9th at the Depot in Beverly Shores, plus Susie Vance updating us about events there.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight someone who's been with us before, actually both of them, talking about an exhibit coming at the Depot, which is, of course, in Beverly Shores, opening July 9th at 5 to 7 is the actual thing. It's Dorothy Graydon along with Susie Vance, who's the executive director. And welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, Dorothy, tell us about your exhibit. I think it's called Liminal Spaces, and we know that your art is inspired by petroglyphs. Just tell us a little bit about the background of that.
Oh, well, you know, I have been hiking out west for the past 30 years, and I hike to very remote canyons and boulders and mountains, and I've hiked everywhere from the Rio Grande all the way up into central Montana looking for petroglyphs, which are carved images or pecked images on the rock walls, as well as pictographs, which are painted images on the walls. And some of these sites are 11,000 years old that were continually inhabited for thousands of years. And so what I really like about it is the fact that there's you learn a lot about the people that lived a long time ago back then. Plus, you know, these kinds of things aren't in history books. And so it's a real learning experience to go to these places. And a lot of times I can see the art that the people had pecked on the walls, you know, 11,000 years ago. And then on top of that, there's something that's 6,000 years ago. And then on top of that, 3,000. So a lot of times at these sites, there are lots of layers and layers of civilizations that have lived in those places.
Dorothy, you named the exhibit Liminal Spaces. What did that mean to you? Because that's like liminal is like a transition space or a threshold. So what was your inspiration for naming it Liminal Spaces?
The reason I named it Liminal Spaces is because when I go to these places, there's almost like a sacred space that fills the whole area. And you feel like you can time travel when you're in these places. And so that's what Liminal Spaces means to me, is being able to time travel in the spaces before us and try to experience and hear what was going on at these places. For example, you know, people pecking on the rock or grinding stones or grinding stones with pestles and grinding corn and anything other kinds of grains that they found, and the hunters coming back from their hunt And I try and fill all my senses with being there 6,000 years ago and try to imagine what it would be like, you know, maybe children running around playing and, you know, that kind of thing. So the liminal space to me is that sacred space between dimensions, between the present and the past.
So is this a body of new work or is it a retrospective?
It's mostly new work. There are some works in there that are maybe two or three years old, but most of the work is new work. And I usually, for the past 6 or 7 years, I've been making my own paper at Andrea Peterson's paper studio in LaPorte. But because of the pandemic, she had closed the studio to the artists. And so I've transitioned to acrylics for now. And I'll probably go back to the handmade paper when she reopens the studio, because I really love making the handmade paper. It's so tactile. And
right.
But right now, there are some paintings in there that are newer that are acrylic on Arches watercolor paper. Hmm.
Susie, tell us a little bit about, you just had the 5x5 exhibit. Tell us maybe about what's coming up in August, but how did 5x5 work out?
The 5x5 was fantastic. People were very supportive. We love selling original art for $55 a piece, and people love buying it and adding it to their collection. We had Christina Nowski, and she had the reception was lights out. There were so many people there. It was fantastic. And then we're having Dorothy. She's been every place else, but we've never had her at the depot. So this is great. And Julie Kasnayunas, another watercolor artist, is coming in August. She's a local artist, self-taught, and she does beautiful renderings of the environment around us. It's really fun. But we're thrilled to have Dorothy coming to join us very shortly, July 9th.
You can find out information at what's your website and address where you're at, and tell us about the dates and times again.
The website is bsdepot.org, where you can actually see another interview of Dorothy. And the location is at 525 South Broadway in Beverly Shores. The opening is the 9th of July from 5 to 7. And wine and beer and soda is free for a donation.
And Dorothy, what is your website?
My website is very simple. It's just dorothygraydon.com.
Well, we'd like to thank you both for coming on Art in the Air, Dorothy Graydon, Susie Vance, for the July 9th exhibit, 5 to 7 at the Depot. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air, she's the Education Outreach Coordinator for Governor State University, especially overseeing the Nathan Manlow Sculpture Park, which has like 29 masterworks. But she's also an artist in herself and works in creative patterns, textures, resembling something found in nature through the use of mixed media. And so that is her background. Please welcome to Art in the Air, Sherry Deneau.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Well, Sherry, how we always like to start off our Art in the Air feature interviews is we want to know a little bit about you and your background. So how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about that.
Okay. A little bit about my family. I was born in Chicago, and my dad was actually raised in Chicago. We moved shortly after I was born to Midlothian area, and I grew up there. So my family, my grandma and aunt were twins, and they also lived with us. Kind of that Chicago thing where, you know, the two flat, they started out that way where family was always above each other. And so they ended up living with us my whole life. So I actually had the bonus of having three moms, and they were twins. So that was great. One man said, no, I'd go to the next one.
Negotiation.
Yeah, but they were really influential in my life. And my mom, she was a seamstress always. So she always had her, I called it pedal to the metal, because she was in there sewing everything, clothing. She worked at a drapery factory in Homewood for years, and then she went into retail. My father, he was a mechanic. I didn't have any background in art growing up. I don't think I even knew there was an art museum. I had no background in art at all. Like, I would color, and I wrote little short stories, and, you know, I was creative in different ways.
So with your mom's sewing background, did she sew like doll clothes or other, were you, because like sewing is very artistic too. And So was she doing things other than drapes?
She sewed clothes for my sister and I always. So yeah, I would spend tons of time in the fabric store picking out fabrics, looking at patterns, she was always sewing. And I hadn't really thought of how that worked into my art until later on. But anyway, long story short, we were always going camping, and we spent a ton of time in the forest preserves. We moved to Bourbonnais when I was 8. Outdoor activities mostly always. And so when I was 29, I decided it was a point in my life. I had been an office manager for years, and I really wanted to get into something creative. And I really wasn't sure what that was. So I was kind of thinking AutoCAD at the time. This was in 1999. So that was still a thing. And I talked to a counselor, and she said, you know, I think you should take a drawing class. Just see what you can do with that. So that's what I did. It was just really kind of serendipitous how it happened. I had an amazing drawing teacher, and the way she taught really is what I needed, because I needed to be able to look at a photograph and translate that, or go outside and look at a tree. So and once I started to be able to accomplish some of that, then I was hooked. So I ended up quitting my job and going full-time to school. I got my Bachelor's of Science in Art degree from Olivet Nazarene University. And then I was invited to teach as an adjunct at the school there. And I taught foundational courses, drawing, three-dimensional design, two-dimensional design, painting. I think really teaching opened up a whole lot of creativity in me, because really I was trying to be the best teacher that I could be. So I was experimenting to make projects for my students to be successful. So that translated into how my artwork came about, really.
Well, maybe tell us about your artwork first, and then we'll explore the job that puts it on there. You also got your master's degree, is that correct?
I did. I went on for my master's degree. I finished that in 2013 at Governor State University, and I was the grad assistant there. And I worked with the director, Jeff Stevenson, hanging shows and curating shows and stuff. So really, I'd like to say living a very artful life. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, you know what? Now that you brought up Governor State, maybe we'll explore that first then. So now you are working at Governor State. So tell us about what you do there in your position as education and outreach coordinator.
Sure. So I am the education and outreach coordinator, but I also get to curate shows for the gallery and the on-campus locations. So there's different spaces throughout the school that we have walls that we can show art. And so the education outreach coordinator, I do group tours. I have been working with schools. It started out like 4th to 6th grade was the prime age, but we kind of opened that up to all ages. So I'll do like high school tours, and as of late, we've been doing Zoom tours, virtual tours, but I think this fall we're going to get back to scheduling some school tours.
So the sculpture's on the grounds, which is like 100 acres, which is kind of magical because it reminds me of the 100 acre wood, even though it's prairie that that's situated on. Are they permanent, part of a permanent collection, or are they on retainer?
Most of the sculptures are permanent. We do have an exhibition, a visiting exhibition program. So some of the sculptures that come in are there temporary, and they'll stay for 3 years. And then, but yeah, there's actually 30 pieces in the collection right now. And we have two new acquisitions that are being added to the NATE this year because of generous donation from a supporter. We are getting a Terry Karpowitz piece.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah,
and we do have one of his earlier pieces in the collection now, but that piece is indoors, so this piece is going to be out in the sculpture park. And then Bernard Williams was the selected artist for our art and architecture grant with Illinois. And so his piece will be coming, I believe, the end of July. They're coming, both coming soon.
So is there a schedule for acquisition or exhibits? So is it every 3 years that they get switched out and that's when new? And what is the process for the NATE becoming aware of these large scale sculptures?
I think, well, we have an advisory board and they're recommended. Some of the artists are recommended. And then we did have a call for entry.
I love that there's a good amount of interactive sculpture as well, including, the oldest piece was from 1968, and that's an interactive piece.
Yeah, that is Marc de Souvreau's Yes for Lady Day. And that is the piece that started the collection, and it's made of a railroad tank car that's been cut in half on the diagonal, or not in half, just cut on the diagonal. So part of that sculpture is, 20 feet above, and it's got steel I-beams and cables. So part of the tank car, you can step in, and that changes, how the piece, it gets the piece in motion. So yeah, that's one of the pieces that can be experienced.
The House Divided is also, that's another, you can walk through that sculpture. I like sculpture that's interactive. I mean, it's a nice balance to have some sculpture that's interactive.
Right. And that's Bruce Nauman's piece. That piece is solid. It's been cut, divided on the diagonal. And then there are no doors, and so there's openings in all of the corners.
I have kind of a technical question. Is there a maintenance schedule for the sculptures, and what is that like? I mean, do the artists come out and visit with you during, it's more than a tenure if it's permanent, but...
Yeah, again, that's the advisory board and the directors. And so we just had Marc de Souvreau's piece painted. And yes, I do hear a conversation of the director speaking with artists about conservation, and then the advisory board, and really, being exposed to the elements of the winter and the rain and all of that. Conservation needs to happen quite often. This is all through donations and contributions and grant. We have our sculpture Wine and Dine. That's our biennial. And it's a really awesome experience to go to the Wine and Dine. We have golf cart tours. And then we have a farm to table dining experience. And so, yeah, it's been a beautiful experience, and we had 300 guests last time. So we're doing that again this September, September 11th.
And then you were just awarded Best Sculpture Park by USA Today. It was a People's Choice. So congratulations
on
that.
Exciting. Yes.
Sherry, one of my favorites, and I've been out there actually photographing some of it, so not real recently, but one of my personal favorites is the Paul Bunyan. And tell us a little bit about that. You described that, in, of course, in our area artists meeting, but tell us a little bit about how maybe he's different from what we might classically see as Paul Bunyan.
Yeah, his so Tony Tassett is the artist for that piece. And in the presentation that I show the tours, you know, he's kind of looking, his piece is more pop art, but he references the classical, you know, the Moses piece and, you know, Michelangelo. There you go. So Michelangelo, he's referencing Michelangelo in that piece as Moses. But yeah, his piece is like 20 feet high and gigantic, and it's more figurative than any of the other pieces in the collection, which are more geometric abstraction. So, and he's hunched over and looks really sad and defeated and
tired, which is not how we think of him.
Yeah,
that's, I've always thought that the face looks really sad and like, It's like a Paul Bunyan 20 years later after his prime, you know, and it's like him still doing that. And it's you know, you sit there and look at him in the face, and I know it's kind of moving. It's because it's kind of the sadness of like, you know, after hearing the myth, this is the reality and everything. So it's a very well done piece. So
So the Nate has adult and youth programs. Can you describe any that are upcoming or what type of programs you had in the past?
Well, the programming is really when schools want to do the tour. And so we'll do like an hour and 15 loop around the lake and see about 12 sculptures in the tour, and that does take about an hour and 15 minutes. You couldn't see the whole collection in one day, but it's kind of fun because then we can have conversation and experience the art. You know, they're so massive, and really the collection has some really monumental pieces, and to be able to get up under that, and you can't really take it all in at once when you're underneath a big sculpture. But yeah, it just opens up conversation. And that's my favorite part of doing the tours, is just hearing, you know, the ideas and of the children and adults as well. And then with the adult tour or the children's tours, we come in and we have like a Nate book and they do like a little art activity. And stuff. So yeah, it's a fun experience.
Is there a virtual tour online that you can do and see all the pieces?
Yes, we do have a virtual tour. There's a really great app. It's called Otocast, OtoCast, and that has the sculpture park. It has the whole collection in it, and it's a really nice app because it pinpoints, it's like the map, and it pinpoints where each piece is. But if you click on a specific piece, there's a recording that talks about the piece. So you could do a self-guided tour, or you could just look at that app from home and find out about the collection that way as well.
Well, you're an artist also, and so we may want to explore your art, leaving time to tell us how to get to Governor State. Tell us a little bit about your art and what you are doing now, what you've done, and what you see doing in the future.
Sure. So I have two different ways of working, and one of them is a little bit more dimensional. I work with cheesecloth, thread, and sometimes burlap, and I'll pull the threads on the pieces and also tie gossamer paper, which is really paper that is on a grid of threads. So I'll pull those pieces and create, pull the threads and create a pattern that I find interesting. And to give a visual, I kind of think of it as a leaf that's desiccating, and so you see like the veining and stuff, but that's how that first came about. But then I started noticing those patterns in many other things in nature. So I'll pull the threads, I'll make the cheesecloth or paper stiff, I'll sometimes dye them, And then I'll do hand stitching and I've just recently started adding beads on some of those pieces, but then I'll pin them to the wall and kind of create some movement. The shadows are very important in that work. It's very slow and tedious. It's a sort of meditative process for me, which is real important in my work. Really, art definitely is therapeutic, and it just brings focus to everything. And there's also this connection of dialogue between yourself when you're creating. And I usually have more questions for myself by the time I finish a piece than answers. So
your job is very big. How much time do you carve out to devote to your personal practice? Well, because I know with teaching, I give so much creative energy toward teaching and my other projects that I really have to be very mindful to continue my own practice.
Yeah, I will say it seems to be getting harder and harder. When I was an adjunct teacher, I would have the summer to create and on the weekends. But yeah, now my schedule with the Sculpture Park is a little bit more. I'm part-time, and so I work about 18 to 20 hours a week. But the schedule isn't consistent. It's a little bit difficult with family and grandkids. I'm feeling the need to be a little bit more creative right now with my own practice. So just juggling everything and just trying to make it work.
Do you have anything on an exhibit right now, or do you have a future exhibit in the works?
I do have some things in Michigan at a gallery called J. Petter. It's not a traditional gallery. It's a fine art, fine wine gallery. So they do wine tasting during their business hours. And so it's two floors of art. And so people can get some wine, walk around, look at the art. I have some work there. And I'm the featured artist in July. I think it's the last weekend in July. I'll be there that Saturday from 4 to 7. I'll be spending some time talking with folks about my art there. And that has some of my favorite pieces, the more relief pieces with the thread and papers and stuff. So
one thing I always like to ask our guests is, coming out of COVID, first of all, how did it impact you as an artist at your work at Governor State? And now that we're coming out of that, what are you looking forward to doing that you haven't been able to do?
That's a good question. When the pandemic first hit, all I could do was make art. I really made quite a few pieces in the very beginning. It just, you know, I was lucky to have that outlet to keep me sane. And work got a little difficult because I was making things up to do online. And, you know, you just have to shift and do what you can do to make things work. But yeah, a ton of research and just trying to get that all figured out. So I'm looking forward to getting back and spending time with people and touring the park and showing my art. Yeah, I did miss being able to show my own artwork and going to gallery receptions and stuff. So.
And so is Governor State now getting ready for the fall for reopening? And also, I know you can do a self-tour out there by yourself, but I mean, doing more formal tours like you normally do?
Yeah, now that it's reopened, we can do tours again. So, yes. And it's open 7 days a week from dawn to dusk. If you want more information on the Sculpture Park, you could go to govstate.edu /sculpture, and that'll give you all the information that you need to know about the Sculpture Park.
Very good. And if people want to get a tour, how do they get in touch with you?
My email is sdenault@govst.edu.
And then look at your artwork on your website. You have a website, Facebook, Instagram?
Yeah, I have sherrydeno.net. That's my website. I'm on Instagram, sherry.deno, and that's my whole artistic life. So there's sculpture park things, there's nature things, and there's artwork. So you get it all on that.
Very good. So any future plans like in education and anything beyond what you've worked on or?
I don't know. I kind of don't plan too far ahead in the future. I kind of try to keep things day by day and week by week. And so not really any future plans.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Sherry Deneau. She is the Education and Outreach Coordinator at Governor State University. You can find her on her website, Sherry Deneau, and that's spelled DENAULT.net as an artist. And the Nathan Manlow Sculpture Park, or they call it the Nate, at Governor State University. They have 29 masterworks over the 100 acres there. Sherry, we really appreciate you coming on Art of the Air and sharing not only your story, but this wonderful sculpture garden here at Governor State University.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
I'd like to welcome to Art in the Air. She's a photographer in Northwest Indiana, just outside of Chicago, but has her background in ecology, so that informs her work. So she captures the natural beauty of the world around her. She also does sweeping drone landscapes. Great work. And she's also a cannon shooter, so that makes her extra special to me. Please welcome to Art in the Air, Susan Kurt. Welcome.
Welcome to you also, fellow cannon shooter.
Well, we like to start off so our audience knows a little bit about you. So tell us a little bit about how you got from where you were growing up and things like that to where you are now.
All right. So my first interest has always been in ecology. That came through my parents. My dad started to restore prairie back in the 70s before I was born. So I grew up with it. And he also liked to take pictures, and he'd take me on field trips with his college classes growing up. And I like to say, I always said I wanted to be like him, cliche as that may sound. And here I am teaching biology at a university, and I love to shoot photography. So I kind of did follow in his footsteps.
Where'd you grow up and where'd you go to school?
All right. So I went to school at a number of different universities, but I grew up in West Chicago, Illinois, and I went to College of DuPage for biology, and that's where my dad taught. And then I moved on to Michigan State University, and then after I got a botany degree, I went to University of Northern Iowa, where I continued and got a master's.
I want to back you up. Were you the science fair first place winner all the time? Or
No, but I do. I recently found a couple participation ribbons, if you would. But I did a lot of experiments with how much cardboard gerbils would eat based on something. We had a lot of gerbils at that point. So I had all these like gerbil experiments.
So was science your I've always been able to do art, but science and history were always my favorite subjects. Was science your favorite subject?
strangely enough, it was one I struggled a bit more with. And I think that just helped me delve further into it, actually, because I had to spend more time researching it and spend a lot of time memorizing and learning all the basic. And I find it so fascinating, though. You're never, ever bored with science.
After looking at your Instagram account, it's so filled. I mean, it's like a holiday for me. Your Instagram account is a holiday for me. It's just so refreshing. And the things that you bake, there's your science. There's the science right there. Science equals great baking because you measure.
What I was going to say, too, is that probably makes you a better professor, because really good math teachers are ones who struggle with it. And I would say the same for science teachers. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the math teachers who just get it, they're not very good at explaining it because they just get it. And I think that probably makes you a better professor.
I sure hope so. And I like to tell my students when we go through the chemistry portion of biology that everyone does chemistry because everyone has made something in a kitchen. And all food is
chemical reactions.
It's chemical reactions, yes, but it's edible chemistry.
That's yes. True. So, where do you teach at right now?
I teach at Chicago State University. I've been there. I just finished my 11th year of teaching there. So it's quite exciting. It's located on the south side of Chicago on King and 95th.
Exactly. So your ecology informs your work on photography. So tell us a little bit about your development in photography, how you started out, what kind of equipment and everything, and how that's developed.
Well, when I got to college, I got my first SLR camera. So I started in the film world. I'm dating myself right there. But I was interested in plants. So I did a lot of plant photography. I'd go out and I'd photograph everything I could see and then have to pay for all that developing, which would slow me down sometimes as a college student. And eventually, after I graduated from university, I went and was a lab technician at Argonne National Lab for a number of years, and I started to get into digital there. And as many people know, that every few years, there's lots and lots of updates. So I just keep building on my my camera and computer selection as the years go on. And every year I try to add one piece of equipment to what I own. So
what is the next thing you're desiring to add to your camera?
So we've been practicing in our yard for the last 2 years with trail cameras, the commercially available ones. We have a lot of wildlife in our yard, anywhere from turkeys to raccoons and coyotes and foxes and all sorts of fun things. And my next goal is to get the more professional trail camera set up where you actually use a real camera inside a box connected with external flashes. It's all very sci-fi, like with IR infrared beams and all sorts of craziness.
That's kind of like, that sort of leads into my next wondering, which is, so looking through your photos, they're of the natural ones, not necessarily the, you know, the commercial stuff. So you've got these enchanting photos of insects, which I completely understand. But when you've got the fox family, so where are you set up and how long do you have to wait? Same with the kayak photo. To get that photo with the two oars so beautifully placed, like how long did, you know, what is your routine, I guess, in capturing those photos?
Well, conveniently for the last 2 years, we've had a fox den maybe about 20 feet behind our bonfire pit. So it's been pretty easy. So, and my husband helps with this also, of course. And, you know, like figuring out what the height is and how far back from these game trails through our yard or from this den, how far to place things, make sure all the plants are cut down and everything else. And hoping to get better equipment and then take it on the road to other places.
Oh, they're so charming.
And you started drone photography, you know, fairly, you know, just a couple of years ago. Is that correct?
Yes. So I had a Indiana Arts Commission grant, actually, which helped me acquire the drone. And I did a project for a year where I was photographing some of our natural areas, the dune and swale systems, which are on the southern rim of Lake Michigan. And we have fabulous natural areas in our region, and not a lot of people are familiar with them. And when I say not a lot, I mean more people should be taking advantage of these jewels, these globally rare ecosystems. And so the drone photography enabled me to get these broad landscape pictures of these different preserves in different seasons that I could use, as well as all the organizations that let me onto their properties.
Right. That's always the tricky part. I have a drone also. Yeah. And I actually have a regular pilot's license. I haven't actually done the 107 endorsement in my case, because with COVID, I just didn't go out with it. I had it and I basically flew it over my lake here where I live. I haven't really gone out and explored the possibilities of it. So what other piece of equipment were you looking to get to add on? I know I just bought a wide angle lens and I haven't used it very much. I did a couple shots. So what's the next thing you want to get besides the trail camera?
Well, I haven't actually thought beyond the trail camera. So we'll see what catches my interest next. But part of it is just spending the time to make sure that I use what I already have. And I do love wide angle photography also. So, have a bunch that are kind of like macro wide angle. So you can get really close to some of those insects, which I do love to photograph, and also show the habitat that they're in also.
I know. I love your insect photographs because they're so engaging. I mean, you really look at them and through them and, you know, they're framed beautifully too. And so are you doing a lot of that framing, of course, ahead of time, or is there a lot of processing afterwards?
It's a combination. So the fun part and the aggravating part about insect photography, unlike plants, is that they like to move away from you.
Same with birds. So,
yes. Yes. I've had a lot of insect and bird butt pictures throughout my career. Or you get this great picture of a landscape. You're like, I swear there was a bird right there. Honest. And I do try to frame things if possible. And then I'll also crop on my computer, especially with Instagram. Now I'm doing more pictures that I try to center the insect or my subject on, because I know I'm going to be putting it in that square format.
So were you contacted to do images of the prescribed burns, or was that something you took on your own?
I've been asked to do a couple of prescribed burns by people I know. So College of DuPage, I've taken drone images of two of their different burn seasons out in Glen Ellyn, Illinois. I've also done ArcelorMittal Research and Development in East Chicago. They've had two controlled burns now, and I did do drone shots of their second one. And it's fabulous to see these burns, these prescribed burns for ecological purposes from the air. I mean, it's just such a different perspective.
Have you taken photos after they're done? Because the trails that they leave behind and the patterns after the burn is out is just phenomenal. They're just beautiful.
They are gorgeous. And you'll get those carbonized stems and leaves left behind. And as soon as you breathe on them, they just kind of disintegrate. So trying to get some of that. And I really like seeing animal trails, kind of like the trails you sometimes see under snow. You'll actually see that in these burn patterns afterwards.
Yeah, it's really
Drone photography is really taking over. I know I used to go shoot as much stuff flying as a pilot, and you're shooting with, and people don't say, how can you do that? And it's not like driving a car, you know, you can steer with your feet and everything like that, but it's so better because you can put it in position. Of course, the one thing I'm finding with drones is, you know, you really only get about 15, the one I have, a Mac Air, you get about 15 minutes of real flight time. So, so you have to really plan it.
Susan, you do work with the Field Museum. So is some of your travels associated with the Field Museum?
No, my travels aren't associated with the Field Museum. I'm more of a research associate. I'm with the Keller Science Action Center. It's exciting. I'm associated with. And so I do donate on occasion a number of different photographs, or I've helped out with a couple of their different rapid color field guides, which are designed for people for free downloads so that they can look and say, hey, I want to know all the different turtles in my region or all these different birds or what types of different bees do I have? And they have guides for that now. And then the last one I did was pre-COVID, and that was one on many of our orchid species found here in the Chicago region. We have more orchid species here in the state of Indiana than would be in Hawaii or a number of other states, which a lot of people are not familiar with.
Now, you did a special art at the Valpo Uptown Gallery called Arthropods, yes. The Unseen World Around Us, and that was some time ago. But what other exhibits have you been in recently? And maybe I know one, COVID shut down a couple things. And, of course, the one we share that we're also in the Dig the Dunes calendar several times.
Yes. So I've submitted photos 3 times to the calendar. And so I think I've managed, I'm doing 100% on that. So 3 times I've been in there. It's a great local calendar that highlights a lot of people, and anyone can submit photos to. So it's always fun to see your pictures in print. But yeah, so I did the arthropod exhibit. I don't think we see a lot of really cool, interesting up-close insect photography. It's one of my little niches, if you would. And so I did the arthropod exhibit to highlight how interesting and interactive these organisms can be. Another one I actually displayed at Uptown Cafe twice with solo shows, and the second time was comparing this dune and swale habitat and all the different savannas we have here in Northwest Indiana, which are endangered ecosystems, to Africa. So I took a trip to Africa a couple years ago for photography purposes and did a number of savanna pictures in South Africa and Mozambique, also some from an airplane. So I didn't bring my drone with me on that one, but the old fashioned taking pictures out of an airplane mode.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
That's always fun. Well, a helicopter, you almost need what's called a stabilizer to get any decent images, mm-hmm. because if you've ever been in a helicopter, it really vibrates you. And
yes.
I guess you can get away with it if you're shooting really high shutter speed, and it doesn't matter. But it's otherwise, it's pretty jerky. Now, you shoot with a Canon 6D as your primary camera?
5D and a 6D are my 2 cameras that I'm using.
You mean the original 5D?
The 5D Mark III.
Okay, yeah. I was gonna say that because I have a pair of old 5Ds, and those are 12 megapixel, and that was my jump to digital. I mean, I had shot film for years, and I had so much money invested in lenses, and yes. Though I processed the after I got the film back and developed, I would process the images digitally, but finally 5D was where I jumped on. It's the first affordable full frame camera. At $3,000, affordable.
Yes.
So.
Well, Susan, I think we met pre-COVID at the state capitol, and really, we had no idea what the next week was going to bring.
No, I think it was end of February, maybe.
Yes, I think it was like end of February. Mm-hmm. And then, for the Hoosier Women Artists.
Yes, and everything shut down right afterwards. So right I was after. Really excited that we got to go to that. And I remember talking to you also.
Now, does teaching biology, and I don't know which ones, does your photography ever come into your teaching? And, of course, this last year has been all, I think, remote teaching. But, you know, do you ever say, well, let's take a look at the, and here comes, you know, Susan's photos to show examples of things.
I will use my photography in my presentations. I don't usually say, oh, hey, look at the picture I took or anything like that. But I will say when I was teaching at home, every now and again, I'd get distracted by what was outside out my window and be like, there's a possum going across my courtyard right now. I'm so sorry, you guys. So I think at the end of that, my spring semester, I shared a collage of all the organisms I saw outside my window.
Hey, that sounds like a title, the organisms I saw outside my window. There could be a whole exhibit there. So how was, off of photography, how was teaching remote versus in person? How did you deal with that, and how was it? Good, bad, or different? Obviously different.
Definitely different. I would say there were good days and bad days. Sometimes you just have the insurmountable technological issues that would happen. And it's like, we are going to have to end class early today because of XYZ issue. But I was also able to videotape some of my labs. And so I put a few up on a YouTube channel so they could do labs on their own, or, you know, trying to find innovative ways that they could actually do some of these labs that we would normally do in a classroom, but so that they could do them at home, or different types of at-home activities we could do together.
And when you're teaching the students in your class, are they science majors, or do you also have a mix of people that are, you know, I have to take this for a science credit?
Yeah, no, I have to take this for a science credit, and why do I have to take science? So I teach mostly biology for non-majors. I've done a couple other classes here and there, but I actually really enjoy teaching non-science majors.
When I was teaching theater classes in theater appreciation, I had almost everyone was not even an arts major, but it was required that they take some sort of arts class. I remember Purdue Calumet for many years had what was called Dumb Dumb Physics, and it was physics for humanities. And it was, and the thing is, I started out as an engineering major, and then I was changing my major. I took that class, and I made an agreement with a professor. I kind of knew him because he was partially advising me. I said, can I not show up for class? I mean, this was like middle school science, and I just take the test. I mean, this was like, oh my gosh. So anyway, and you've been doing that 10 years there?
So 11 out of the past 12 years. There was a 1 year break due to financial issues that the state of Illinois had.
Okay.
Where basically they didn't have a budget for a year and a half, which kind of makes it hard if you're a state employee. And yeah. I worked for Shirley Hines Land Trust that year, which was awesome. They're literally 11 minutes down the road from me. So it was
fantastic.
And they're all over the place.
The shortest commute I've ever had.
So I have a question about your work with the Keller Science Action Center. Yeah. What kind of research would be typical for you to do there?
So I've done two different things. So right now, since I'm now affiliated with the Keller Science Action Center, and by the way, these are unpaid affiliations. They're great,
rewarding and enriching.
Exactly. And my goal is not necessarily to make a career out of photography, but I love sharing the photography and sharing our natural world, especially here in such an urban environment. And that's what the Keller Science Action Center lets me do with different collaborations with the Field Museum and other organizations.
Well, you have such a natural, intuitive gift for the natural world. You really, they're just so engaging, your photos.
And yet you have a nice commercial side of things. I've seen some of your commercial work and everything. And that's sometimes fun and challenging to do those too. Yeah.
Well, they're delectable. Your food stuff is just delectable. Yes. Completely.
Thank you. I've been told that I haven't been putting up enough lately, to tell you the truth. I get harassed if I don't put up food pictures down again. So I find that very amusing. But I sometimes have to remind people I do take pictures of things besides insects and plants. I do like commercial photography and architecture and people photography, as I like to call it.
Well, and your personal cooking and baking, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's quite an experience. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of artistic talent in many areas.
Working with people can be, I know I did a senior photo shoot, and it was like tight timing. I shot it all on my property here. It was like boom, 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 like 2.5 hours, quit a little studio shots. Let's get out in the property. So yeah, it's kind of fun to work with people and everything like that. So, with exhibits coming up, are you looking forward to anything that you haven't been able to do? We always talk about how COVID impacted you, and we know about how teaching, but you know, personally, did it cause you to be more creative or?
I spent a lot more time in my yard and I take the dog for walks all the time, which is where half my photos come from, I think. So I joke that he's my photo assistant. But, you know, I had a couple of things canceled last year, which is a bummer, but hopefully I'm going to reach out soon and see if we can reschedule some of those shows. I'm going to be in a couple group shows potentially in this area in the next couple months. And the big project that I was been working on through the whole COVID, we're all doing it remotely, is the new Save the Dunes guide to what to plant in your yard for pollinators. There was a big rollout for that for Pollinator Week, and then it's coming out sometime in July for a free download for anyone who wants to use it. And I've done a lot of photography for it, as well as many other individuals.
Excellent. Well, we just have less than a minute left. Tell us about how people can find your photography online, your website, Instagram, how they can get in touch with you.
All right. So everywhere I am Susan Kurt Photography. And so www.susankurtphotography.com, at Susan Kurt Photography on Instagram or on Facebook also. And it's Kurt, K-I-R-T.
Not like Captain Kirk, right?
No, definitely not like Captain Kirk, though. Oh, I get that all the time.
Well, Susan, we appreciate you being on Art in the Air and sharing your story with us. That's Susan Kurt. And you can find her at SusanKurtPhotography.com. And elsewhere, I'm sure if you do a Google search, she'll come up there. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your story.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. And it was nice seeing everybody again. So...
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art in the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.